We've got a great show for you today, but before we launch into it, just want to remind you to check out our partner, Black Type Thoroughbreds. Great way to get involved in horse ownership and to get the thrill of owning what amounts to your own professional sports franchise through their auspices. Black Type Thoroughbreds managing partner is Jake Ballas. You can learn a lot more about him and about Black Type Thoroughbreds at blacktypetb.com. You're listening to the In the Money Players Podcast. Hello and welcome to the In the Money Players Podcast. This is show number 32. We are recording it Wednesday night, April 10th. I'm Peter Thomas Fornatal, back with you in the Brooklyn bunker once again, but not for long. It was Kentucky last weekend. It's Tennessee tomorrow and Arkansas this weekend as the magical mystery tour of these Derby preps continues. On the show today, we've got some really fun stuff for you. And we're going to start off by bringing in the co-host of this program. He is in the planet Texas. He is the people's champion. He is Jonathan Kinchin. What's up, JK?
PTF, what's the word? I'm getting ready for this Masters thing. I'm going to make my first Masters wager, but mostly because I don't have anything to do tomorrow and Friday, so I need something to root for. It's always fun to, you know, when I first started coaching high school football, the youngest coach on the staff was responsible for real mowing the practice fields. Our head coach, who's a great man, was loved having nice grass. And so we used to go out there with like a real mower and cut the grass every day. On the weekends, someone had to come up there. Every day we cut the grass. So it was like a golf course. We had like perfect, like shortcut grass. And so when I turn on Augusta and I see like the grass there, it gets me excited, especially like on a nice TV in HD. So I'm going to be watching a little bit of golf this weekend in between races.
Things you didn't know about Jonathan Kinchin. If this whole horse player / pundit podcast host thing doesn't work out, he's going to be a fine gardener. Not that there's anything wrong with being a gardener, but I just didn't know you were obsessed with this kind of stuff. And what do you mean nothing's going on the next couple of days? We got Aqueduct and Keeneland. I don't know what you're saying.
Well, you know, I don't have any responsibilities in life is what I mean. You know? That's what I'm talking about. Those things always happen. I'm always participating in those. I'm focused more on I got to do this, that, and this.
I think it's that you're so good at multitasking, only doing six things at once feels like you're slacking and that there's nothing going on. And I think the same can probably be said of our guest. He's here today to prove, among other things, that no good deed goes unpunished when it comes to this show. He is an expert when it comes to the economics of horse racing. He's a professor at Rhodes College, where I will have the opportunity to be a guest lecturer tomorrow. Really looking forward to that. Terrific success in contests as well, with deep runs in both the NHC and the BCBC back-to-back. Not an easy thing to do. I'm talking, of course, about Marshall Graham. Marshall, what's going on?
Well, I'm in my office. I've got my first exam for my horse racing class. That's a second half of the semester class. It started in mid-March. And so I'm preparing their exams. They'll be rolling it at 7:30 for an exam that should keep them on their toes and should be a good test of the material we've covered, and hopefully will be a fun and challenge for them. And then tomorrow, of course, we have the privilege of having you, Pete, as a guest speaker in my class. I'm very excited, looking forward to the pearls of wisdom that you give to these young and eager minds interested to learn more about our great sport.
No pressure or anything, but you know what? I do relish this opportunity, not only as somebody who loves just talking about horse racing, meeting young horse racing fans with a chance to try to frame the game for them a little bit. I appreciate that opportunity, but I'm also, as many of you know, a frustrated academic myself. So this is an opportunity to like take a little peek down the road not traveled, as it were. And I'm very grateful for the opportunity. Also super grateful, Marshall, to you and your partner in 10 Strike Racing, Clay Sanders, for the opportunity to run that retweet contest last week. Turns out that Rodney Clements and Wesley Mahan will be joining us at the party. That's going to be a lot of fun. And another opportunity, I think, just to open up the circle of racing and our circle to a broader group of people. We've talked before, one of the things we can all do as racing fans is to try to introduce the game in the right way to people. You guys at 10 Strike have done a fantastic job doing that. I want to hear a little bit more about your interactions with other racing fans, whether it's through 10 Strike or some of the connections you've made and people you've maybe drawn into the game a little bit through your class.
Well, you know, first of all, to the winners and the retweeters, make sure to pack your long underwear. And you too, Pete. It's going to be it's gorgeous out today here, but it's looking like the high is 58, and it's going to be pretty nasty weather-wise. Our tent is big and hopefully shelters us well from the wind and rain. But yeah, through our partnership, 10 Strike Racing, we've met so many people, especially from Arkansas, who have wanted the opportunity to learn more about the ownership part of the game, to participate in the game in a small manner. And we operate basically as we're not making any money off this. Clay and I both have our day jobs, and we view it as an opportunity to maybe together we could own a horse or two, a nice horse or two, can claim a few horses. But if we get our friends together, we have an opportunity to buy into some nice horses, and we're very excited because we have two running on the card this weekend. We have Warriors Charge. One reason I'm excited that you had me back on the pod was last time I came on, Warriors Charge broke his maiden, ran a big number, 89, ran the 89 buyer. And he's running in an A other than on Friday. We actually, he's a Munnings, and my favorite angle of all angles is Munnings and Spikestown in the mud. And so Clay and I, earlier in the week we were thinking about, given the rain coming along, would we be crazy to go in the Arkansas Derby? Well, cooler thoughts prevailed, and we're running on Friday, but we're excited about that horse. And then we have Irish Mischief, a filly with a real puncher shot in the fantasy on Friday. And we're excited about both those horses and that our partners will be there to join us. Join us there this weekend in our tent. And again, we've met a lot of people who have such passion for the game through our ownership experience.
You left out another member of 10 Strike who likes Munnings in the mud, because I actually saw her bet one blindly at Fairgrounds and the horse won, and that's Clay's wife. She'll bet a Munnings in the mud as well too. So good thing you guys decided not to run on Saturday. I'm sure she would have emptied out the bank account.
Yeah, well, no, look, it's our favorite angle. It's our favorite angle. Munnings is a Spikestown on the mud, and then when they get back on the dry, fade them a little bit.
That's interesting.
Anyway, maybe Warriors Charge. We were hoping for rain on Friday, not Saturday, but again, we'll have to work with the hand that was dealt us.
That's right. That's how it goes. You mentioned that mud angle. Is that something you came up with anecdotally, or do you have a data source that you mine to try to come up with those wet track breeding or turf breeding angles, Marshall?
So in this case, it was first the sort of, we noticed the patterns, we noticed it. And then in looking at the data, you can see that as horses jump up in the mud, they win at a higher rate, they run faster numbers. Their ROI is better as well. So it's a thing that's not totally caught on with the bettors. And so I'm almost to a blind bet of Munnings and Spikestown when it rains. And when it rains, I'm looking for those horses to bet.
JK, you and I have talked about this idea off air, but I think it's worth repeating or talking about a little bit. And it's basically free consulting to anybody out there who makes any type of performance figures. I feel like the weakness of the way a lot of people look at mud ratings or turf ratings is that they're based on stats, how many starters versus how many wins. This is one area where I'd really love to see what happens to the figures that horses run. I would think that you'd look at Munnings or Spikestown and you'd see something like a plus 10 on average. They run better. Maybe that's exaggerated. Maybe it's more like plus 5. But it's going to be a plus something when they move from a dry dirt to a wet dirt. It's just something that I would love to see out there in the world. And I'll throw this one to JK. Do you think that idea would work? And then we'll get Marshall's comment on it.
I think it would work. I mean, the people that I've talked to about it, it's a programming issue, which most things are. It's an uphill battle when it comes to programming. But yeah, I just think it's more significant. I'm less concerned about You know, the example I've given him before is I'm less concerned about Bob Baffert being, you know, 7 of 14, you know, adding blinkers 2 turns first time, right? I'm more concerned with what's the figure improvement, the average figure improvement for those 7 winners, or even all 14 of those horses that ran, not just the 7 winners. What's the figure improvement or the figure decline in those situations? I just think it's a more powerful number for what we're trying to accomplish. There's so many variables that come into those 7 winners and those 7 losers of the 14 that I, you know, mythically came up with. There's so many variables that you're not available to see that I think influence that data point and that final number. And that's why I'm always a little bit nervous to put too much stock into those.
What's your take on that, Marshall?
I agree. I'm also interested in the ROI on those horses. Is it something that the public does not already know, that's not already priced in? So, you know, if you can get on something that the public doesn't already know, then it presents an opportunity for you to take advantage of it. And I think that's, you know, a lot of what we do and a lot of what I preach in my class is you're making small sample size decisions and determining what is, you know, what's the signal and what's the noise, what's significant and what's not. And so in those cases, you've got to make basically educated guesses whether in the long run, when we have full sample, it's going to be statistically different. And again, often once we do have a full sample, there's no longer any positive edge you have.
You mentioned the signal and the noise reminds me that one of these days I got to go through the shoe boxes out in the unfinished part of the basement and find the old interview I did years ago with Nate Silver before anybody had heard of him. And he was just a guy making money playing poker online. But another stats question for you to follow that up, Marshall. How big of a believer are you in the concept of either impact values or statistics that are corrected for the price that the horses are? Do you try to look deeper in either of those directions as opposed to just looking at things like strike rate and ROI?
I mean, I'm more strike rate and ROI and figure improvement and sort of the relationship. So I guess that's a simple, short answer.
Yeah,
to that
that's
question.
Absolutely.
I'm
fine.
Not. It's something, you know, something probably I should, you know, I should investigate more. But, you know, again, often once you have a big enough sample size, a lot of those things, you know, the public already understands.
I think that sounds right. I was just curious if it was something you'd considered and dismissed or hadn't looked into as much.
Some combination of both, right? Okay. I mean, there's so many different ways to approach horse racing is that you've got to sort of synthesize and approach it the way that fits the best with the way that you handicap, right? And so it's a matter of prioritization, and it's very easy to sort of find new toys and have it, you know, change too much the sort of core strategies that got you to where you were. So, you know, I've fallen victim to not, I need to do more investigating. Stats race lens is something I want to take a deeper look at. There are different approaches I would like to study more, but as of now, it's not a big part of my game.
Fair enough. JK, you're as good as anybody about incorporating new elements into your game. I want to hear you talk about that for a minute and how and why you try to keep incorporating new things, and if you're ever tempted to just go back to the best day you ever had and try to do things exactly that way again.
I mean, I actually think I probably learned it. Like, I learned that, I don't know if it's a trait or that importance when I was coaching, and, like, you know, hearing stories of, like, Bill Belichick going to visit Chip Kelly in Oregon to learn more about up-tempo stuff, and going to all these coaching conventions and seeing all of these accomplished Hall of Fame type coaches who are still trying to gather as much information as they can. Because for a couple of reasons. One is that when a new product comes out, then it's a leader in changing the game. The people that I'm going to be betting against are using that situation, right? I mean, so you have to have an understanding of it so that you can understand why people are doing what they're doing. And then the other part of it is like, I want to have every possible edge that I can digest when I'm making decisions that put money on the line. And so I just like to keep grabbing at things. And most of the things that I've tried to add, I don't often discard them. You know, I mean, 6, 7 years ago or whatever it was, 6 years ago, 7 years ago, when I started using Timeform US, I started using Timeform US just like I've kind of started using Stats Racelens. Like, just, you know, kind of a little bit, just to supplement what I'm doing anyways. And now if you sent me to battle with one thing, I think I would probably want to go with Timeform US, right? And so I just want to keep adding, keep piling on, because a lot of times when you're looking at races, you're trying to make these last second decisions between one horse and another. You know, you're trying to decide on Friday in the Makers 46 if you're going to, you know, if you're looking for a speed horse, do you want heart to heart or the Fairgrounds horse on the outside? I'm going to forget his name now, but I'll remember in a second. You know, and so I want to use as much information. I want to use the time form pace figures for both of those horses to find out what happened. I want to look at the trip notes for both of those horses, the workout reports for both of those horses. I want to look at some stat stuff on the trainers with days off and things like that, and try to decide if I can find a weakness in one of those two horses where I can toss one and use the other and gain a lot of equity. So I just want as much information as I can when I'm trying to make these hard decisions.
And you're not worried about confusing your brain in the process?
No, I don't think my brain really does that. No, I don't. I mean, I guess there's a world in which the worst thing that can happen in that situation is you end up using two horses, but maybe you should have, you know, you just had so much information in your brain you couldn't separate them. But to me, that's, I don't want to separate them because I tried really hard and I couldn't. So I don't feel like it messes me up. And don't get me wrong, look, I can handicap a pick five in 6 minutes like the rest of the gyms out here, right? I mean, I can do that too.
I've seen that,
Marshall. Everyone at this on this call has done the 4 to 5 minute pick five before, and I hit those sometimes too, annoyingly enough.
Negative reinforcement.
Exactly. I feel much better when I take my time. You know, I print the PPs on, or I put them in the iPad on Wednesday. I kind of do a first pass through to get some ideas. Then I have my flight on Friday where I get through the deep dive. And then Saturday morning I wake up and I kind of revise everything. And then scratches come and I revise it again. Like, that's my way I want to approach the game. But time doesn't always allow for that to happen.
Where do you stand on this idea, Marshall, of constantly adding things to the process and the process constantly evolving for you? I see you as an interesting blend of old school and new school, and I'm honestly, I have no idea what your answer is going to be.
Well, again, I wish I were better at adding. There's so much stuff out there, and there's been sort of an explosion of stuff that's been done really over the last 5 years. So it's incredible, from coming to this game where in the 1980s, where there were just a few books out there, to there's now so much of a literature, easy to get so much literature, so many different sort of computer modeling programs, so many different books written on different approaches to handicapping. I mean, heck, there's so many different marketed speed figures out there. So, you know, I would, there are parts of the game I would like to sort of improve my understanding of. I've never sort of fully embraced or even understood a lot of the work that Sarton Brohammer have done. I did try to do a bit of it in my class last time. I won't do so this time. And I spent a lot of time with the raw data myself, trying to come up with tools of my own. I came up with a model for pace and I will then use that and show them how we are able to do some modeling of track bias. So I mean, it is a sport where it can be overwhelming, the amount of different ways to approach the game, and there are many different ways to approach the game that can lead you to be a more successful player.
You talked about all the books that are out there. I want to give out a quick plug, and we're going to have the author on at some point. Another guy I interviewed many moons ago talking about Barry Meadow and his new book, The Skeptical Handicapper, Using Data and Brains to Win at the Racetrack. Very interesting stuff where he worked with another guy whose work I really admire, Ken Massa, who has the massive HTR database at his disposal. And they did all these data type queries, very much like a book you've probably read too. I'm going to space on the name of it. And the guy wrote a few books, but William Kieran years ago did a book of using computer studies to analyze racing to see what he could learn. This is sort of like an update of that book, I would say. Meadows, such a contrarian, wonderful contrarian in so many ways. There are some real nuggets of gold in this book. I have to assume that you have it. I don't know if it's on your reading list or if you've actually read it yet, but you know the book I'm referring to?
Yeah, I just got it just came in the mail the other day. It's sitting on my shelf hopefully I will get to it in May after this class is over. And you bring up William Kieran. The first sort of handicapping strategy I talked about was a career in speed points, right? Just a simple, very basic way to evaluate the pace of a race. So that's sort of, to us, was the starting point. Let's figure out who's going to take the lead and how this race is going to be run. And there's not much to these speed points, but it was a way to at least introduce racing with a old school type tool.
And looking at the speed points now in 2019, I know they're part of certain PPs, so some people are definitely looking at them. I assume they're priced in. They're obviously kind of a crude tool, a little rudimentary. But when you go through, I'm assuming if you make the students bother to do it, that there must be some signal in there. There must be something you can learn. It must help you in some way to design a race. Yes.
Well, I just want them to think about think about designing a race. And so the speed points are sort of the simplest way to point to who's going to be up there on the lead, who's going to be coming from behind, and how fast the pace is going to be for a particular race. So it's crude, but it's a starting point. And then from there, we can sort of dig into, more of, hey, let's look at the pace of these races and see who really might get the lead when we do a sort of more nuanced analysis.
It sounds really cool. What are some other things in the class so far this year that you've felt have resonated with the students? Anything that surprised you in that regard is sort of my companion question.
Well, they've really enjoyed their handicapping contest. You'll be here for the race of the day. I think we've been through 9 races, and 3 students immediately separated out themselves. The first time I taught the class in 2017, we went through the speed points, designed the first race, and the two horses ran 1-2 that looked to be loose on the lead, and they were 7-2 and 5-1, and so I looked like a genius. And half the class had one horse, half the class had the other, and they were head-to-head through the stretch. And this time, the horse that looked to be loose on the lead was nowhere to be found. A 20-1 shot won the race, and it was just a horse that I thought had no chance whatsoever, so I looked like a moron. 3 students had that horse and have separated them out from the field, so I don't know what you do when you have a cap horse to kick off a 15-race contest is makes it a lot less interesting, but I don't think we've not really gotten into the strategies involved in playing contests yet. So they seem to all still be active participants. On this exam, I do a lot of pool pricing stuff. That's a big love of mine. I think their eyes glaze over when they do it. But there have been a number of students who come to office hours and ask me questions, but I still sort of pinch myself. Heck, I'm teaching a class on betting markets, and they're coming to my office hours asking me to calculate a fair price exacta. And we made speed figures, and so we went through the process of it. Not so much that they should go off and make their own speed figures, is we really wanted to get behind the process of how buyer speed figures are made and look at situations where a figure might be projected, a figure might be different than what you would expect. And I'll give you an example. Midnight Bisou, sort of given the variant that they gave on the day, should have run a 93, but they projected that out to a 99 given the pace of the race. And so, it's a race that's worth following. What is the correct number? Now, they have a lot more experience than I do making the buyer speed figures, the professionals at Buyer and Associates. But what they're doing is they're making decisions based on a small sample size. They're projecting. They're doing the same process that any other figure maker might do. And so it's interesting to note where their figures vary from what they would normally project as their variance. And so the single biggest source, the single biggest effect on the price of a horse are those speed figures. And so if we can find situations where they may be off, the number may be fuzzy, that may present a opportunity to find value.
Man, I went to office hours a lot when I was in college, but it was mostly just to convince teachers that I had some sad story that they needed to bump me up a letter grade. But I only wish I could go to office hours and look at will pays with Professor Graham. That'd be a ton of fun.
You mentioned,
yeah, they seem very nervous about tonight's exam, right? So I've had a lot of people come by office hours today.
That's funny. You talked about making speed figures and the perspective it gives you. I contend that every player should go through the exercise of doing it for a meet or a month or something, just as you said, Marshall, to sort of internalize the process and just get a sense of where numbers might be stronger or weaker. If you don't want to do it yourself, the other sort of cheat, I would say, for it is to look at or track certain figures afterwards. I used to call the process race review, where you go back and you look at what the buyer and the time form were for a race, and you just get sort of a sense when they're in lockstep versus when one is one way and one is another. Just gives you like a little bit of perspective on how the figures are made, and it's the underpinning of so much of the pricing. I mean, would you say that the commercially available speed figures are still the dominant force in the final win odds of a horse at this point, or has it started to evolve and change by 2019?
Well, there are a lot of factors, but I still believe that the speed figures are the dominant contributor to a horse's odds. And so again, I'm in total agreement. I like looking at multiple speed figures, see how each of them approached evaluating a certain race or certain card. And it's those situations where the speed figures may be off, may not represent a horse's true ability, just like situations where there's debate over a track bias, there can be debate over what's the correct number. Ultimately, remember, these figures are made off very few races. And we're looking at Oaklawn. Oaklawn is actually a fairly easy place to do figures because they have four different race configurations, right? 5.5 furlongs, 6 furlongs, mile, 16th. And most races are at 6 furlongs or mile 16th, all on dirt, right? You can imagine at Saratoga with the outer and the inner and all the different distances, right? How much projection is done. And so that makes it to me very worthwhile seeing how professional figure makers approach making their figures and situations where they deviate from one another.
All right, we've talked a little bit about Oaklawn's Friday racing. I want to turn the conversation to Saturday at Oaklawn. Not going to make you do all the heavy lifting here, Marshall, but I do want to get your thoughts on the stakes and open it up if you have a spot play or something else interesting to look at elsewhere on the card. Let's start off with the Count Fleet, which is a grade 3 and goes as race number 4, 318. I assume that's – actually, I don't know. Is that 318 – Central time or 318 Eastern time? I probably should have looked into that. Anyway, it's sometime
it's
in the middle
Eastern.
Of the year. That's Eastern. Okay. On Saturday. It's a small field, but it's a pretty interesting field with a real tough knocker I admire quite a bit. Whitmore showing up in this spot. What are your thoughts on this year's Count Fleet, Marshall?
It's a small field. I think Mattoli just looks like he's going to get loose on the lead. He's a horse that has run really well, run really big numbers, but always run in races where he's been loose on the lead basically had slow fractions to run with. But this looks like the same scenario. It's a small field. I think it's Mattoli over Whitmore. I don't think it's a race that offers any betting value. I think it'll be great to watch. I'll be rooting for Whitmore. Whitmore's always a horse that has beaten me, and I've never given the horse enough respect. But I just think this race just sets up too well for Mattoli. And I think everything is going to be priced in. I think he's going to be very short, and the exact is going to be very short. But it'll be fun to watch.
JK, I know you haven't had time to fully do this card. I know you just looked at the stakes races for the show, but is your gut that Mattioli is one to just watch, like Marshall seems to be implying, or is this one you might want to build your early picks around?
I mean, I could see myself betting Mattioli to win the Breeders' Cup Sprint at this point. I think he's really that good. You know, we try not to play the jockey musical chairs game because it can lead you down the wrong path. But if you look at Mattioli and you look at Whitmore and you look at the races that Whitmore's running, you look at the races that Mattioli's running, Ricardo Santana has ridden Mattioli, last 6, 7, 8 times. Whitmore even further back than that, and Ricardo decided to stick on Mattioli. Now, here's the thing. If Ricardo rides Mattioli like he's the best stinking horse in the race and is aggressive, puts him on the front end, and really takes all questions out of the situation, I think he'll win for sure. If he does one of those silly rides, he's not that type of rider, but if he does one of those rides we see very often where he tries to, like, raid him on the lead and just kind of invites everyone into the race and da-da-da-da-da, Whitmore will mow him down. That is not Mattioli's game. Mattioli's game is he's fast and he finishes. If you take away half of his strength, which is that he's fast, and you just ask him to finish, he is not going to outfinish Whitmore. It is a rider's race between Ricardo and Louis. I'm going to go with the guy who's been riding all the races at Oaklawn. I'll go with Ricardo and Mattioli.
It makes sense. A couple things I want to pause on there. Well, especially this, when it comes to your Breeders' Cup Sprint prediction, doesn't it give you pause that, as Marshall points out, it's actually remarkable. I'm looking at Mattioli's Timeform USPP, and I'm not joking. Every single one of the last 6 races, there are fractions coded blue. How that's possible in sprint stakes in America, I guess it just speaks to the point of everybody's thing to do in 2019 seems to be to rate speed whenever possible. But that's just remarkable for me, for a horse this good and this fast, to see all that blue coding. I think that's going to be his undoing when he goes and faces the big boys come the fall.
Well, here's the good news about that, right? Is that he doesn't have a race in his 8 lifetime starts where he had red fractions and gotten beat. So the jury's still out. I mean, he obviously can relax and finish. He's not a runoff. He's getting all these blue fractions. He's a rateable horse. So when he gets into situations where he needs to take back a little bit off of an XY Jet or an Imperial Hint or whoever else, Bob Baffert has, that's going to be sprinting later in the year, I think that it's actually a good sign that he can shut off a little bit, but he's still quick enough to make the lead in every race that he's been in, except for a couple of them. So I get your point, but let's see him run poorly with red before we knock him for blue.
I respect your contrarian take there. Let's talk about the Grade 2 Oaklawn that goes as race 9 at 6:22. Hopefully the tent at this point, we're going to be dry. It's going to be a little warmer than forecast. There'll be some delicious food and beer still being served, some fun socializing along the way. Yes, sir?
You called the race the wrong name.
Oh, what did I call it?
Well, you said it right off the air earlier today. You don't remember what you said?
No, I don't remember what I said.
The city of light stakes.
Someday there's a very good chance this will be the city of light stakes. There's a prediction, a bold prediction right now. Marshall, JK's talked enough lately. Let's go back to what a cool assortment of horses, some real local favorites, some real quality showing up here. Where are you going to go?
Well, that's a very nice way to put this field relative to City of Light and Accelerate a year ago.
Yeah.
So, maybe that's a broad statement on the division. I don't like to think of the open, I don't like to think of this as a division. I mean, ultimately, it's all horses are eligible to run this race, right? It's an open race. And so this is sort of the division where champions are crowned. To win, to be the champion, you got to win against open horses. And so it's a race, I swear, if I owned a late, it's a race that I would have looked at, because a late going a mile of 16th in the Apple Blossom against Midnight Pursuit, I think that's a little short still. And here you have a mile and 8th against this crowd. I think she would be, you'd have a big chance and a big chance to stamp, to have a nice win against in open company. I know this is a Grade 2 versus a Grade 1, but she's already a Grade 1 winner. As far as, what we actually have in front of us, I'm very curious to see Quip. I mean, Quip was a very interesting horse in the 3-year-old crop and ran well here last year. And you know, even numbers wise ran pretty well, sort of getting back to his top first out in the house hope while dueling on the rail. And so that's where I'd go. I'd also probably give Giant Expectations another chance. I don't think he got a terrific trip being wide against maybe a good rail. All that being said, Rated R Superstar was wide too. So I don't know if I, you know, maybe you want to throw out everyone in the Essex, but that's mostly repeats. So it's not a race that that I can find anyone interesting. Those are the two horses I'd probably go with. I don't think either will be a price.
Poor break, too, for Giant Expectations last time, if I'm remembering that race right, just to underline that one a little bit. JK, where are you landing in here?
Well, Giant Expectations always breaks poorly. If you look at his watch all his races, he's always slow away from there. So in this situation, he's either going to be slow away from there again, and he's going to sit in behind, and I don't think he can win from there, or he's going to be a dead hustle away from the gate. Joel's going to pop him out of there, and then I think he might kind of get confused and be hard to shut off, and then get out there with Quip and Pioneer Spirit and kind of heat things up again. I kind of like Rated R Superstar again. I mean, I was a little bit agitated that I barely missed him at 79-1. So then I wasn't going to play him at 14-1. Then he won. Lafitte actually made a joke at me on air about it. He's like, I know Jonathan had Rated R Superstar because I talked about him so much, but I didn't. He's gonna be even shorter this time than the 14-1 he was last time. I think he's gonna get a good trip. Marshall mentioned, you know, speed and inside was better last time. He was outside. I don't think the added ground is gonna hurt him. He always seems like he's doing his best running late. I think Rated R Superstar makes a ton of sense in here, and I'm just gonna have to swallow the fact that he's gonna be a little bit of a shorter price than I want. I am completely against Giant Expectations.
That's a great.
Although I do like Ryan Exline. But I'm against Giant Expectations.
Well, Ryan Exline is a cool dude and a brewer out there in Santa Barbara. Casa, help me out. What's the name of his brewery? I haven't been. That's why I don't have it at the tip of my tongue. But
Casa, they actually have a beer named Champagne Room.
That's awesome.
Because you know he was an owner of.
Of course.
It's Casa Agria, A-G-R-I-A.
Casa Agria. And, that's great.
Yeah.
Got to check there, that
I'm
out.
I'm actually looking at a picture of the Champagne Room beer right now, a barrel-aged and blended spelt Saison, whatever.
Saison.
Aged on Sauvignon Blanc grape skins. How about that?
That sounds really delicious, actually. And it reminds me, before, JK, we were texting off air, and you sent me this comment about Makers 46. And it was some sort of editorial comment about Makers 46. And I, assuming you were talking about the whiskey, I was impressed. I shot you back, you know, my tasting notes. Oh, I really like it. It's a little woody, got those vanilla flavors. And you're like, what are you talking about? Talk about the horse race. I thought, second time in the day here, I'm sensing that you've got a sommelier in you somewhere, JK.
I am not Somalian. So that, I know sometimes some angle I might look Somalian. I'm not Somalian.
Oh my goodness. The Sri Lanka. I didn't know. Is there bad sus between the Sri Lankans and the Somalians? Anyway.
No, I'm just saying. I'm just clearing it up for everyone. People always ask me. It's my favorite thing when people start getting comfortable around me. They always say, so what are you? And I always say, I'm a horse player, real estate guy. American. No. But what are you? I always.
Interestingly enough, I get that too. So
there you go. You guys in your heritage, people ask questions about you wherever you go. You're such captivating figures. All right. We've gone far too down this rabbit hole of nonsense. I did want to go back to one serious point about Giant Expectations, which was that was such a you know, I was just obviously making chatter on a podcast, but to upgrade Giant Expectations for the bad break last time would be like absolute rookie mistake of Trip Handicapper. When they always break bad, there's absolutely no reason to give them an upgrade, and you just factor it into your race design from there. And that is actually an excellent segue to the next race, the Arkansas Derby, because another horse who has the exact same disease as Giant Expectations in terms of never wanting to get away from there is running, and that's Country House for Bill Mott. Not a horse I would be counting on to get over the gate problems based on his body of work, but such a compelling runner nonetheless. Marshall, who's going to win this year's Arkansas Derby?
I think it's going to be improbable. I think that they need to win or run second to get into the Kentucky Derby, right? Am I correct on that?
And so I believe so.
I think that if you sort of look at the two most talented horses in this race, it's Improbable and Omaha Beach, and Omaha Beach doesn't have to win. And so, I think if we looked at the Santa Anita Derby last week, when Game Winner didn't have to win, they, keep him four wide, and, run him around the track, get him a good tune-up for the Kentucky Derby. Maybe same situation for Omaha Beach. Improbable needs to get into the Kentucky Derby, needs to run well, and should be geared up. I do think this sort of Improbable's last race is really interesting. This debate on whether any time that you sort of classify the rail as good or bad, you're making a decision on a fairly small sample size. And I became pretty convinced that day that the rail was good. A lot of horses ran well on that rail. Warrior's Charge ran on that rail for us and won and really jumped in his figure. And then Long Range Toddy sat on that rail the whole trip and then, picked up the pieces of that as that race collapsed. I had a long discussion about that with Sean Borman, who was convinced that it was neutral and made a very compelling case for why he thought it was. And then, sort of looking at the horses that have come out of that race, Life's a Parlay mm-hmm. won the sixth race on that card, an allowance race on that card on the rail the whole way around, and came back and really ran the Excelsior with a pretty tough trip last time, and really jumped up speed figure wise. So it makes me less sure about the rail that day, and so maybe I've underrated Long Range Toddy and hopefully underrated my own horse Warrior's Charge, but I'm still going to go with Improbable. I still think he had a really tough trip and did a lot of the running in the race to get caught at the end, and I think he needs it, and I think he'll be prepared and run a big race. Country House, I just think this just doesn't seem like the Bill Mott plan, right? Running the fourth time before the Derby, running in the Risen Star, and then the Louisiana Derby, then coming back three weeks later and running in this spot. I love looking at Lucky. I love looking at Lucky going a mile and eighth, but just doesn't seem the sort of fit to see this horse sort of moving forward, at least based on sort of the trainer horse profile.
We always talk about Bill Mott with a target. This is Bill Mott without a target, right? If things had gone differently in the Louisiana Derby, it feels very unlikely to me the horse would be here. However, all these things you go ahead.
Well, he'll get some pace. I mean, with Gray Attempt dropping, stretching back out, running that, after running in the gazebo, he'll get some pace to run at. So we'll have a good pace. But I still think you're right. It seems like a horse without a plan.
Well, now, having said that, I still could land on the horse. It's just going to, as it always should at the end of the day, come down to price for me. We talk all the time about lone speed. You'll see situations with a lone closer. Now, granted, these speed horses are so good that some of them will, one of them or two of them will probably hang around. I think for a third, fourth type key, Country House is excellent. And I might use him. I might, if I'm just messing around in the race, I could very easily see making that play as the lone closer to come and get a little piece. But if they let him go, it's something a little wild here, 8-10 to 1. I'd be interested in giving him one more shot, even though sometimes when something is so off brand for a trainer. I remember this with Bobby Frankel, on his wheelbacks. He'd do these weird things that you could never see him doing. And it's just anecdotal, but I feel like those horses would tend, he's such a good trainer, those horses would tend to run well. I don't necessarily think this is like Mott without a plan, owner pick the spot, though it could be. I think it's more, he thinks the horse can handle it, so he's in the spot and he's going to get a great setup. I'm still very attracted to the horse. And if you get feet to the fire to make a pick from here, I to be a little hot takey or whatever, I'd probably just go ahead and go Country House and make the note that you got a key in those underneath spots. Obviously, not one that I have a ton of confidence in the way I prefaced it, but he is a horse I think that's worth a long look. And that concept of the lone closer is something that we've never talked about on the show, but I do think is a thing. JK, your thoughts?
Oh my God, I got so many things to say. All right, I'm going to do it quick. All right, first of all.
Take your time.
Think about this. I got a head-to-head opportunity for you here. So with Country House, you just be thinking it's not one of the big three. So just, I'll tell you that I'm going to save the pick for later.
Okay.
Here's what I will say. Country House is this is absolutely owner picked the spot, calendar picked the spot. Someone that made the wrong decision picked the spot because they they couldn't run last week because that'd have been 14 days. They can't run next week because they can't get into the Derby. This is 21 days out. It's the only choice they had to try to get into the Derby. It's the only reason they're here. The horse doesn't break from the gate. He's had one work since his last race, and he didn't work out of the gate. So what has changed that this horse is suddenly going to jump out of the gate, Joel?
I think he can walk out of there. The pace scenario, I think he can walk out of there without it being detrimental.
If he walks out of there, Long Range Toddy is not going to walk out of there, and he will definitely outfinish him. Because Long Range Toddy doesn't necessarily have – like from that outside post, they're going to have to take back. They're not going to put him on the lead and go and get in the mix and go, you know, two or three wide first or second flight. He's going to come back a little bit to them, in my opinion, and I think he'll outfinish them. Now, with that said, I think of the big three, Improbable, Omaha Beach, and Long Range Toddy. I don't want Long Range Toddy because he got the trip last time. I do want him more than Country House, but he got a perfect trip last time and barely beat a horse that got a bad trip. Omaha Beach, like you said, or maybe Marshall said, like I think it was Marshall that said, is, you know, he doesn't necessarily have to win this race. I do love, and he, you know, and he was kind of loose last time. I'm not sure he's going to be loose this time. He was traveling at a good clip, but still, whatever. We'll see what happens with him. I think he'll probably run well, but I don't necessarily want him in this spot. I'd be much more excited about him come the first Saturday in May. I think Improbable of the big three is the most likely winner, but the horse that I'm going to pick is Galilean. And it's one of those situations where I was against Galilean last time, and he ran pretty stinking good after kind of, you know, he kind of came out of there weird, if you remember, and he kind of rushed up a little bit, and that's kind of what caused Improbable to kind of get caught in no man's land, because I think he was expecting him to be inside of him, and he wasn't. And I think Galilean's going to run much better than he did last time. 28 days since his last race, everything spaced out great. He was 26 days between the stake, the Cowbred Stake in California. I actually think he's going to run much better as long as Flavian Pratt does not butcher him like he butchered the horse that I bet on at Keeneland today.
That was a great diatribe. Head-to-head accepted. Galilean versus Country House. We'll have a lot of fun with that one, JK. I like it.
You know what I'm going to start doing? I'm going to start singling horses that I play you in head-to-heads with, because like they get a real boost. It's, you know, we talked about earlier about if we can get a PP that like shows blinkers off or whatever. There's definitely like the buyer points are like plus 17 when JK picks one versus Pete in a head-to-head.
I may only be 1-82 against you all time, but it's going to be 2-82 come Saturday night. We'll be celebrating in the 10 strike 10. Shame you cannot be there, JK, but you'll be having fun down at Keeneland. We're going to talk about Keeneland in a minute, but Marshall, great work. Before we let you go, anything else on Saturday we should be having our eye out for?
You know, given that the past performances came out right as I was headed off to my 2-hour faculty meeting, which is the, you know, I have the joy of teaching wonderful students, the brilliant young minds that are going to lead our country and our world in the future, but I also get the joy of sitting through 2-hour faculty meetings. And so
you can't,
so
like,
I did
put
not
the PPs.
Take a good look at the card.
You can't put the PPs in, like, fold them inside some sort of intellectual-looking newspaper and, you know, kind of thing.
I was on my phone the whole time looking at, you know, sort of at least looking over the stakes and seeing who got in and scrolling through it. So I did get a little bit of work done there, but I was also hurriedly, you know, sort of finishing up my exam corrections as well. I mean, look, I think if this pod goes up in time, which I'm sure it will, the Fantasy is a very interesting race. Motion Emotion is one of these horses that, I mean, just looks great figure-wise. If you do any pace figure numbers, they're enormous. I mean, they may be among the best of all three-year-old fillies. But she's scary. She's one of these horses that gets out on the lead, and she causes her own fast pace. And so she's almost certainly going to be over bet. It's going to be interesting to see the rider change from John Court to Mike Smith to see if that can slow her down. But if it can, I think that there's interesting outsiders, and I think one of those outsiders is Irish Mischief, 10 Strike Racing's own. But anyway, that's my only
I like it.
My only pick.
All right.
I got one thing about you just said. I saw a video a long time ago. I don't know where it's at. I'm sure it's on YouTube or something. IRAD posted it, and it was where Mike Smith and I think he was at Belmont, and they were in the room together, and they were at the Equisizer, and Mike was explaining to IRAD how when you're rating a speed horse, instead of doing the like 90-degree arm pull at them, he believes that that makes it harder for them to breathe and they fight you. He drops his hands and puts them like down by their neck and then like restrains them from there, where he feels like they can kind of have their head a little bit more and they relax and they can breathe a little bit better. It's much more comfortable for him. And he was like coaching IRAD up on it. And IRAD was like, it was a really cool video. And so I think that there's something to your point on motion to motion on how Mike rides speed horses and why he rides them so well.
He rides her well. If she can contain her speed, she's unbeatable here. Simple as that.
All right. Well, fingers crossed as far as that goes. Marshall, I look forward to seeing you tomorrow. Hopefully we will have a nice incident-free travel, get in plenty of time, and we will be talking soon. Thank you very much.
Great. I appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Before we proceed, just want to remind you that this podcast is brought to you by our partners at Black Type Thoroughbreds. For more information on racehorse ownership, check out blacktypetb.com. I also want to put in a quick word for our newest partner, Lone Star Park. Their 2019 season is nearly upon us, and they've got a series of handicapping contests that folks are going to want to know about. And the first one is coming up on Sunday, April 28th. It's the Steve Sexton Mile Day Challenge. Lots of NHC seats on the line, 10 guaranteed, $20,000 in cash, 100% payback. There's a lot going on. This is one you're going to want to check out if you can get down to Lone Star for Sunday, April 28th. They're going to have a feeder there on the 27th. More information, check out lonestarpark.com/handicapping-tournaments. I'll send around that link as well. All right, JK, we teased the idea of talking Keeneland, and I do want to get to that, but I first want to talk about a couple of cool things in the contest world. First is some news. The NHC announces it's going back to Bally's. The Treasure Island era is over. When you think back to the NHC's years at Treasure Island, which is all that you or I have ever known as long as we've been in the game involved with contests, what will you think of when you think back to TI? He's trying not to make some joke about that bench that we talked about in the NHC pregame show.
Nick Tamaro said something funny on Twitter, and it's absolutely true. He's like, I will officially never go to Treasure Island again. Look, I appreciate Treasure Island and how they kind of stepped up and did some things that not too many other hotels would do. And I know that sounds confusing to people, but just for instance, like, you couldn't go to the Wynn because catering is just too expensive there. And so you think takeout,
too small,
you're
too
frustrated about takeout situations now. And it's just a very tough deal to try to deal with in Las Vegas with all the unions. And it's an uphill battle. And TI, they came to the plate. Now, I'm looking forward to the switch. I've actually was fortunate enough. I stayed in Vegas a couple of days and got to go over and kind of look at the situation. And a couple of people asked, like, well, why? Well, a couple of reasons why. A is the Treasure Island is probably not a destination for most people that aren't coming there for the NHC. So one of the great things is if you're going to participate through the windows or at the tables, now you're going to get Caesars points, which I think most players will be more appreciative of. You can use those Caesars points for other trips to Vegas and stay at Caesars Palace or you could stay at the Cromwell or Bally's or Paris or a number of other properties all over the world. So that's another plus about it. The other thing is that it's going to be one room. And I saw the room. The ceiling is twice as high as the NHC main ballroom. The room is three times the size.
I love that.
Everyone will be in the same room. The food will be in the same room. The guests will be able to be in the same room. They'll have like little, I think they're going to try to have little lounge areas set up so you can get away from your table, go sit on a couch and hang out and chop it up with people. And the other really cool thing is, and I know that they had talked about doing, and I don't really feel bad about sharing this if it doesn't work out, but there's a possibility that because there's so many surrounding Caesars properties with Cromwell, Caesars Palace, Paris, Bally's, there's a possibility that you'll be able to use points or upgrade if you're a double qualifier to maybe stay somewhere else. I know they're trying to work through the logistics of that, it's just an overall good move. Caesars was excited to have us as horse players, so I appreciate that. It should be fun. It's a nice change. I think people will get excited. Going to the NHC is exciting. Walking through Treasure Island and walking by that bar that's all down there and seeing people, it's exciting. And now we all get to kind of do something new. I don't know where the hangout's going to be. I don't know where I'm going to get coffee from. I don't know where I'm going to handicap in the morning, where I'm going to sit, where I'm going to have dinner. There's a heck of a lot more restaurant options. So I'm excited about it. I think it'll be fun. It's definitely a positive move that someone out in Vegas felt like it was appropriate enough to reach out and to try to get us as horse players to their property.
Who's kidding who? You've never made a dinner reservation in your life.
Exactly. That's why I like the place with more restaurants. And don't worry. I'm not going to Gillies or Senior Frog here.
I think it's Gillies. I think it's Gillies. Anyway, let's not kick a place.
But I will
down.
Say this. I do, without a doubt, love Tony from he's the only person I've really dealt with from Treasure Island. He's the manager of the sports book. He treats our friend Marvin extremely well. And Marvin's a little bit bummed out because he's got a hookup. You know, everyone loves him at TI, but Tony was really good to us as horse players. Tony's one of the guys that does matchups. He's one of the only two or three places in Vegas that do matchups, and that's because of Tony. So this is nothing towards, you know, Tony. It's just, you know, I'm excited to try something different and do something new.
I had no idea we were going to talk about it for that long. My earlier estimate of how long the recording was going to take tonight is now officially out the window, but I'm glad you're passionate about it and you bring some good insight. So thank you for that intel. Couple of more contest notes. These are a little bit closer to home. Hey, we got a couple of new partners. One is none other than the Breeders' Cup. How exciting is this, JK? We are going to be doing some promotion for the Breeders' Cup and the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge, and they're debuting a pretty cool game this weekend that I have a feeling a lot of our listeners might be interested in. It's a low-ratio, high-roller game, you might call it. You can get all the details over at horseplayers.com, but why don't you tell folks about the specifics?
Yeah, it's a $2,750 entry. It's a little steep, but if you're a guy who knows you're going to play in the $10,000 Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge, it's a 1-in-4 ratio, which is a ratio that I much prefer to the 1-in-65. I think you have to have one of your greatest days to win a 1-in-65. To just outright win a 1-in-65, it's tough. And so I love the idea of a 1-in-4. It's an opportunity to get into the contest for $2,750 rather than the $10,000. There's no travel tied on in there. The takeout, I think, is somewhere around 9%. I'm actually looking at Twitter right now telling me that that's too high, which is bizarre to
9%
me.
9% is too high?
Yes. And you can imagine who's – I'm not knocking because I think we're like semi-friendly now, so I don't want to be ugly. But anyways, I think it's a great opportunity to get involved with these low ratios. Anytime there's a low ratio, I think your strike rate is much higher low ratio than it is the other one. It's going to take, if you try to play the 165s, it's going to take you 10 or 15 165s this year to win. So why don't you just put all that
if
together
you're lucky.
And play
I mean,
the 2750?
You'd be way ahead of the game there. You also point out there's a massive difference between, somebody said, well, why not just buy in? Well, there's still a pretty significant difference between 2750 and 10,000. I won't make JK try math and fail on that one, by the way. But let's just say there's a significant difference in that.
Absolutely.
And
the
even,
other thing
yeah,
is, and Pete, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No,
I don't know if you're going down this road or not. This is something that we've been talking with them about doing, and so the idea was kind of was a little bit put into play quickly. There will be feeders the next time they do this.
Yes.
They didn't, you know, they got it up. They wanted to take advantage of the great racing that we're going to have on Saturday. And I think the next time it happens, there will be a much better opportunity for people to, you know, cause 2750, that's a niche product, right? Like there's not a lot of guys that are going to be throwing out 2750 to play in a contest, but there is guys that will, but there is a lot of guys that'll play $100 to try to qualify into the 2750, and then they just got to beat three guys and go from there.
And do us a favor, when you sign up for this game, do it through our link we'll send out on Twitter so that people know that we sent you. That's just helpful for them in their tracking of things, helpful for us, makes us look good, obviously. So, but it will be in both of our feeds on Twitter. He's at UT Big Hair. I'm at Looms Boldly. We'd appreciate it very much if you go through that extra step. You'll be seeing a lot about this over the next couple of days. Click that link, sign up, bada boom, bada bing. Speaking of contests, JK, want to let people know that it's now official. Everybody knows we have our partnership with the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation, and we now have a new different kind of partnership with Derby Wars. Derby Wars is going to be running a contest on April 20th. It's going to be all for charity. Every penny of takeout is going to go directly to the TRF. And I say we're, I don't know your schedule yet. It's possible this will just be me. If that happens, maybe we'll get you to call in or something to say hi. Could be us doing a live broadcast of the show. That'll be fun. We'll talk a little bit about TRF. We'll talk a lot about the races that day. It's going to be the last four at Aqueduct and Keeneland on April 20th. I think we're looking at a $100 price point to play. We still have to finalize some of that stuff. We'll have feeders as well that week. It should be a lot of fun. Do you know yet, Jonathan, your travel schedule? Or is there, are you drawing live to potentially participate in this show?
420. I don't know. These next 2 months are crazy for me. I mean, I don't think I have a Fox show 420. So maybe, I mean, it might be able to work itself out. And how about that? I'm very interested to see, you know, how can, if you're a takeout hater, how can you hate a takeout that's going to a charity?
They'll find a way, JK. They'll find a way.
Oh, I'm going to just send like a GIF that's like makes them seem like they're the worst people in the world if they're mad at someone for the takeout rate on a thing that's going to charity. So it should be a lot of fun. Everybody needs to try to participate in that if you can. And obviously it'll go to help our four-legged friends and our two-legged friends that are involved with the four-legged friends.
That's the idea. And this isn't official yet, but the rumor is those feeders might be, well, let's say this, they're going to be low takeout or possibly even no takeout to get into this big dance. We really want to raise as much money as possible for the TRF. You guys have done a great job, by the way, audience, already. And those of you thinking of contributing, we can't wait for you to join the party. Special shout out to listener Andrew Norris wins an NHC seat over the weekend and immediately celebrates by making a donation to the TRF through our link, thanks us in the process for helping guide him along his tournament journey. We look forward to meeting him out at Bally's. And that's just something, I know I don't want to be too preachy about it, but I just love that idea. You have a big score, especially if we did anything to help you along the way. Go ahead and give. We've got that special link. They sponsor the early week show, but we'll give them some free love. I don't think anybody will mind hearing this one more time. TRFinc.org/players. That's the place to give. We appreciate your shout outs and thanks, especially to Andrew for that one. Okay, Keeneland time. We don't have a ton of time for it, JK, but I want to give you a chance to give your thoughts on these Saturday stakes races. We talked about them a little bit on the other show, the Keeneland Select Players podcast with Gabby Gaudette. We gave sort of the early look. Maybe we'll get some more thoughts from you. Shall we start with race 7, the Ben Ali?
Race 7, the Ben Ali. Let me scroll here, and I am in.
Boom.
No, I'm not. Saturday. Sorry. All right, here we go. That was Friday. Ben Ali. Got it. All right, race 7. Yeah. So Just Whistle Down on the Rails entered on an allowance race on Friday. I don't know what Michael Matz is going to do in that situation with that horse. Obviously ran a huge number back at Keeneland last year, a horse that you definitely want to consider. But, man, I couldn't get away with Flame. I couldn't get away from Flame Away. I don't know if you remember the show that Double R was on, Rich Averill. I kind of was like against Flame Away. I actually played the late pick 5 that day, but there was a carryover, and I didn't use Flame Away. I like tossed the horse because I was trying to beat him. The inside's not exactly where you want to be at Tampa, and so I thought he was going to be down there, and he won despite. I think he's going to run well today. He's run well at Keeneland. He's run there twice. He's been in the exact of both times that he's run. I think he's going to run well. He's tactical. He's forward. He gets Irad. Irad on the lead or Irad forward lead place can be dangerous if he doesn't end up taking himself out of that position. I think Flame Away is going to be tough in this spot. That'll be my top choice. The horse that catches my attention but is nonetheless, he's got 3 really fast races in his career. And you know, one was on Wet Fast Poly, one was on Poly, and one was in the mud. So maybe he just needs it to be weird like that for him to run well, but he's definitely going to be a little bit interesting. He should be a little bit of a price.
Okay, let's talk about race 8. We're turf sprinting here in the Giants Causeway, going 5.5 furlongs. An old favorite of mine in here I just have to give the shout out to. It won't be much price, but I just like Morticia so much. Such a hard trier. Couldn't quite get it done last time at Gulfstream. But and you look at the PPs and it looks like maybe she's forgotten how to win. I think it's a question of getting her in the right spot. I'm going to give Morticia one more chance here in the Giants Causeway. JK, what did you come up with?
Give me the trainer and the connections that don't know how to lose sprint races, and that's Surrender Now, Rockingham Ranch, and Peter Miller, who gets Johnny V. I don't know how many times Johnny V has ridden for Peter Miller, but I'm definitely interested in Surrender Now. Surrender Now has two wins last year at Del Mar, going 5, stepping up to 5.5. It obviously has some ability in that spot here, and I think that filly could be extremely tough. Kind of the speed of the speed feel, gets Johnny, and then has all those sprint winning connections. The owners of Roy H, the winner, the owners of XY Jet, and the owners of Stormy Liberal, who's our back-to-back Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint winner. Peter knows what he's doing, and Rockingham Ranch knows what they're doing when they're buying these sprinters. I think Surrender Now could be tough in there, but Morticia definitely deserves some credit.
Let's move on to the Lexington Grade 3, goes as race 9. My old pal Sueno back for more. Wondering if Sueno can't work out kind of a nice trip here. I'm going to give Sueno one more chance. What did you think about the Lexington?
Yeah, Sueno is a horse that I've tried to fade the last 3 times, and I successfully have done so. Fade on the win end. I didn't like the horse at Santa Anita in the Sham, ran second. Didn't like him in the Southwest, ran second. Didn't like him in Louisiana Derby, ran third. But he kind of keeps hanging around, and he's about to make me look stupid. I actually think that he's kind of trending in the right direction. I want to say Harvey Wallbanger, but I don't want to bet him, especially at Keeneland on the race where he almost got inducted into the Chandelier Hall of Fame. Another twist of fate is a horse that I would be interested in. But the problem is, and I like this person, so don't start any Twitter beef. Ed DeRosa loves Another Twist of Fate, and he also likes the Chop House. So there's no way that this horse can win.
For those who missed it, that's a callback to another episode. I don't know if I can go down the rabbit hole and talk about it, but let's just say this. Ed, who's a friend, he is a fan. He's a big fan of the hot take. And sometimes I think these hot takes are just straight up trolling. And when he mentioned this restaurant, the Chop House, which I've never been to, but apparently is more full of AARP types than it is like proper food loving types, from what I've heard, I'm thinking maybe that was one of these straight up trolls, JK. So I don't know that that's dead on or what. I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there.
My girlfriend lives in Lexington. I am there all the time. I eat out all the time. The Prince of Keeneland is there, and I'm there. And I always ask people now that I've seen Ed's video talking about Chop House. I'm like, because I'm scared to try it. I keep asking people like Chop House, Chop House, and everyone looks at me like, what? Are you crazy? What? Are you crazy? What? So I'm gonna try it next weekend.
Nice.
Next week I'm gonna go Tony's Sunday night. Tony's Sunday night, I know that's good. Crab cakes, like we talked about on the other show with Gabby Gaudette. I'm going to do Tony's, but then maybe during the week I'll go to Chop.
We're all waiting with bated breath for the report. The Jenny Wiley, JK, the Grade 1, is race 10. Is it as simple as Rushing Fall bidding? Gabby dropped that crazy stat on us about horses winning 4 graded stakes races at Keeneland, and it was a surprisingly exclusive list. Rushing Fall aiming to join it. I don't see any reason to bet against her. How about you?
Well, there's 2 other Chads, but Wise Dan being one of the other horses. I wish I owned a sports book or I had an in with a guy where I could tell them a very fun prop bet would be will 2 of Chad Brown's 3 runners run in the trifecta. I think that'd be a lot of fun, and they'd probably action.
Wouldn't it be
on both
1-5?
You think so? For 2 to run in, and you think it'd be 1-5?
That was my gut. It's probably an overreach, but that's my first gut. Is like, wow. I mean, last year he was 1-2-3 in the darn race. So it's
JK tries, math fails.
I don't know. 1-5 is too short, but I think it's odds. I think it's certainly a significant odds on as opposed to a 50-50 play. But I don't know. I'm just throwing stuff out.
Here's what we're going to do. We're going to do our own sports book.
Okay.
We want one of our listeners to do a on Twitter, do a poll. Well, I guess we'll do it. I'll do the poll, right?
Yes.
I'll do the poll. So I'm going to do a poll on Twitter where it says, you know, he has one horse in the exacta. I mean, excuse me, one horse in the trifecta or two horses in the trifecta. And I'll do Ask at ITM and we'll retweet it and we'll see what people say and see where it ends up.
Will three horses be a choice?
Have a good idea what the price would be.
Yeah. Will three horses be a choice? You're going to do all three? One horse, two horses?
Should I do? Yeah, I mean, it eliminates the point of like the head-to-head, you know, matchup bet. But yeah, no, I'm going to, yeah, we'll do one, two, and three. I don't know. We'll think about it all.
We'll think about it. This is a best. Yeah, production meeting in the show gone wrong here.
Right. I like Russian Fall. I think Rimska and On the Moon Again are like the same horse. I feel like they both ran really well last time, but I just think Rushing Fall is a freak, and I won't tell you because I want to give our friends at Keeneland Select some love. I won't tell you who Gabby told us is working unbelievably in this race. You got to listen to the Keeneland Select show to get that Gabby piece of which horse in this race she's heard is working unbelievable since the last race that horse went in. But I actually think that all three of the Chad horses are going to run in, and I think Rushing Fall is going to win.
There you have it. Okay, we are way over time on this edition of the In the Money Players Podcast, and given that we have two other shows this week, we're not going to belabor the point any further. So I'd like to thank JK. I would like to thank Marshall Graham. I'd like to thank all of you, the listeners. Thank you so much. You make this show so fun to do, especially those of you who are supporting our partners like Black Type Thoroughbreds and the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. We always like to throw in a shout-out for our friends at 10 Strike Racing, particularly this time thanks to Marshall Graham's fine contributions to this show. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. In the Money Media's Director of Business Development is Drew Cotney. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. We'll be back before you know it. May you win all your photos. PTF here again, just to remind you one more time about this low ratio, high roller contest for the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge. Get all the details on horseplayers.com, or if you really want to help us out, go to our Twitter, click through our link, and get to the page that way. Check it out, Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge on horseplayers.com.